Can we call the meeting to order, please? Could we have roll call, please? Blankenship, roll call.
Commissioner Gilliland.
Here.
Councilmember Handy Peters.
Present.
Mayor Matusik, or Vice Mayor Matusik excused. Mayor Misarzak.
Here.
Councilman Conroy. Commissioner Curry.
Here.
Commissioner McGurk. Councilmember Saylor. Commissioner Sowers. Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Ford.
Here.
Councilwoman Long.
Here.
Commissioner Rebels.
Here.
Councilmember Patterson.
Here.
Councilmember Denny's.
Here.
Councilmember Tusak is excused. Councilmember Lowry. Councilmember Wagner. Mayor Emmett. Vice Mayor Rogers. Councilmember Wheeler's excused. Commissioner Shoup is excused. Commissioner Burton. Mayor Gibson's excused. Mayor Sowell. Councilmember Perrone. Linda Costello's excused. Heather Blank.
Here.
Judy Craig. Dustin Savage.
Here.
And we have a quorum, and Mayor Sowell is the voting member of the Small City Alliance today.
Can I be excused?
No, because we want to.
Not today. I want to make sure everybody turns their cell phones off or just turn them so they don't ring. And please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Commissioner Gilliland, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Any public comment, public participation this morning? All right, thank you. We have before us item Roman numeral 4, the consent agenda. Are there any items anybody wishes to pull off the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the consent agenda, Gilliland.
Second, Misarzak.
I have a motion to approve and a second to approve the consent agenda. Any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion passes unanimously. Moving on to Roman numeral 5, action items. Item A, review and approval of the draft 2016 River to Sea TPO legislative priorities. Everybody has a copy of that, correct, Lois? Lois, you want to?
That's correct. Comment? The updated version was included in the agenda that was mailed out last week. After the last meeting of the board in October, we went ahead and reconvened the legislative issues subcommittee, and they revised the item pertaining to funding. And hopefully everybody's had a chance to look at that, and if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Councilmember Denny's, questions?
No question, just a comment. Thank you. I looked at it. I think you reflected the comments that the board made here at the last meeting, and I appreciate you responding to that. With that, I move approval.
I have a motion to approve and a second to the approval of the DAF 2016 River to Sea TPO legislative priorities. Is there any comments, any debate? Is there any objection to the motion? Without objection, showing the motion passes. Roman numeral 5B, review and approval of resolution 2015-23 amending the fiscal year 2015-16 to 2019-20 Transportation Improvement Program, or commonly known as the TIP. But none of us are making any money off of it. There's no TIP to us. Lois?
Not that kind of TIP.
Not that kind.
So there are two items that are included in this particular amendment. One is just an increase of funding for a resurfacing project along US 1 in the city of Edgewater. And the other is moving a project into the current year to utilize the TPO funding that we set aside each year, and that's the Doyle Road Paved Shoulders Project. And when that started to move towards getting realized that it was going to be programmed, the county, along with DOT, took a closer look at that project and realized that there was some additional funding needed in order to make the lanes uniform. And to really do the improvement that needed to be improved. And so they have requested an additional $600,000 be added to that project in construction funding. And that request was reviewed by all of the committees, the Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee, because of course it involves paved shoulders, the Technical Committee, as well as the Citizens Committee, and all of those committees did recommend approval of the additional $600,000. This is current year funding. I would let you all know that another project, which was a Port Orange project, was deferred to the following fiscal year, which left a hole in this year's funding anyway. So this is an opportunity really to spend down money that we are going to have in the current year on a project. So with that, I'll certainly entertain any questions if you have any.
Move
any
approval. Second.
We have a motion for approval and a second. Is there any comments or questions? Hearing none, is there, motion to approve the resolution 2015 amending the fiscal year 2015-16, 2019-20 transportation improvement program. Any objection to the motion? Any objection? Without objection, so the motion passes. Item C, review and approval of request to increase funding for the design phase of the West French Avenue sidewalk.
Chairman Patterson, can I confirm that that did include with the amended amount for the additional $600,000?
Yes, it did. My second did as well.
Okay, let me redo the vote. We have a motion to approve the resolution of 2015-23 amending the fiscal year 2015-16 to 2019-20 Transformation Improvement Program as amended. So any objection? Without objection, so the motion passes. Thank you. Okay, item C, Roman numeral 5C, review and approval of request increased funding for the design phase of the West French Avenue sidewalk.
This is a similar request in that the city of Orange City is entering into the design phase for some sidewalks along French Avenue. The original estimate did not include all of the work that's necessary. And so once Orange City actually got a detailed estimate from a design consultant, the cost increased, you can see, almost doubled. It was recognized in the feasibility study that additional work was required, so this is not necessarily a surprise. And the city of Orange City is looking for approval of the increased funding. The TPO policy says that I can authorize as much as a 10% increase, but anything beyond that has to be approved by the board. And so Orange City is requesting the additional design funding amount so that they can continue moving forward with the project that's prioritized by this board.
Any questions?
Move to approve.
The second. Commissioner Ford has a question.
Yeah, it's a general question that goes to this, but more generally. What is the acceptable level of design cost relative to the actual
microphone, please?
A general question that comes up quite a bit in our council meetings, what is the acceptable level of design cost versus the cost for the entire project? Generally, I have been told that design cost should run somewhere between 6 and 10%. If it's much more than that, it best have a very good reason to be more.
Obviously, it would depend on the complexity of a project. It also
Correct.
Tends to be dependent on the cost, the overall cost of a project.
Yes.
A sidewalk project that is fairly routine should have a pretty low percentage, 8 to 10% maybe. But again, a more expensive project may have a higher design cost. Likewise, lower cost projects tend to, you know, there's a basic cost associated with design. So sometimes on smaller projects, the design cost can be a higher percentage just because the basic cost of showing up and doing the work is what it is.
Because this would suggest that the cost of the sidewalks is approaching $1 million.
I don't know the estimate of this particular project. Certainly, you know, when you get into drainage issues, you t- tend to run into some higher design issues. We have looked at it during some of our meetings with the Department of Transportation, average design costs by general project price. And I can certainly share that information with you. But there are kind of ranges and rules of thumb. And then again, then you have to discount or add to because of the complexity or the uniqueness.
Well, what we're moving towards is to try, if it goes outside of a certain range, then there has to be an explanation of the complexity. Because I can tell you some of the design costs coming across my desk are absolutely, and these are for rather simple projects, getting a little out of control.
Again, I think some of the things like drainage, survey information, which sometimes projects are lacking, can become very expensive and drive project costs up. And you're right. I think that's the decision that a lot of communities face. At what point do you say it's not worth the cost-benefit just doesn't balance?
Well, just that there should be explanations whenever it's above, I'm looking for our city to develop a policy that nothing comes before council on design costs that are outside the range without a full analysis of why they're higher. We understand there can be complex projects, but on the average, I've seen a lot of these coming across at very high percentages without particular any explanation of any complexity. And I hope there is complexity in this one.
Okay. Commissioner Sager, you're recognized for a motion.
Move approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a second from Commissioner Gillen. So we have a motion to approve the request for to increase funding for the design phase of the West French Avenue sidewalk. Is there any debate? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion passes. Item D, review and approval of 2040 long-range transportation plan, the LRTP document.
We have Martha Moore, who you have heard from a number of times over the last couple of years regarding the long-range plan. And I would just share with you all that, of course, in September, we adopted a cost-feasible plan and an executive summary. But the 2 years of work that goes into developing the long-range plan and getting to that point involves a lot of activity. And so this is a draft version of the report that staff has been working on to document all of that activity and put it in one single area as opposed to all of the separate documents. And so what we're looking for, as we do with this board, is for approval to go ahead and send that off to DOT and Federal Highway for review, and then we'll take any comments and put it out for a final public review period that requires public notice, and then we'll come back with a resolution adopting the full plan in January. And with that, I'll go ahead and let Martha give you a summary of where they are with that documentation.
Ms. Moore, you're recognized. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. As Lois had said, we've spent about the last 2 years coming every month and providing you with presentations on all of the technical pieces that go and make up this long-range plan. Those pieces range from explanation of our modeling efforts, our socioeconomic data, congestion management, public involvement. And we adopted the plan, or you adopted the cost-feasible plan in summary, back on September 23rd. We have 90 days to gather together all the documentation that supports that cost-feasible project list. And so we're coming with you today to get your approval on this draft documentation because we have to meet that 90-day window, and of course the board does not meet in December. So what we have on screen now is the documentation that backs up the cost-feasible project list. It's divided into chapters, and I'll go over those really quickly. Again, you've seen the majority of these that are because I brought all the pieces to you, but we have to put them together, attach all of the technical appendices that provide the individual reports. But as you're looking through and you're doing your review copy, in the introduction, we describe the various chapters. We start out where we are now, introduction. You have a section, chapter 2, that talks about the vision, goals, and objectives. And within chapter 2, We actually have a table that compares the federal planning requirements to where they are found within the long-range plan. Chapter 3 is the demographic data. We talk about the socioeconomic data sets that we put together. Those pertain to where people live, where they work, where they shop now, and then projected out into the future. That was the basis of our transportation modeling. Chapter 4 is the financial plan, where we're looking at the revenue forecast that forms the basis of how much money that we have in the 2040 long-range plan for projects. Chapter 5 is a description of our public outreach, and I feel that we definitely went beyond the level of public outreach in this long-range plan, because not only did we do those Make Your Mark charrettes and the three public meetings covering East Volusia, West Volusia, and Palm Coast, Flagler County, but we also did a number of presentations to community groups like Rotary, like the Flagler Chamber of Commerce, West Volusia Summit, where we talked about the long-range plan. Lois did a few radio interviews. She went on with Big John, among others. We had newspaper articles. Lois actually went out and did some one-on-one stakeholder meetings with some of groups like International Speedway Corporation, Consolidated Tomoka, to get their input on what transportation improvements were needed in the future. So we describe all of those in our public outreach section. Chapter 6 is where it bogs down a bit. If you're reading through, your eyes may decide to glaze, because that's our technical planning process, where we do talk more of the nitty-gritty of the modeling process, where we started, how the model was configured to present the results of this process. We talk about the congestion management process there. Chapter 8 covers environmental considerations, the fact that all of these projects do go through an environmental screening as is required. Chapter 9, we recognize that this is not just about capacity projects. Our long-range plan is also about multimodal projects. So we do talk some more there about the multimodal efforts of the TPO and those projects. And then Chapter 10 is the LRTP amendment process. And I know that it was just adopted and we're finalizing the documentation, but as I've looked around in some of these committee meetings, I know probably someone out there wants to make an amendment. And so the process is laid out in Chapter 10 for you. We're posting everything to the LRTP website in addition to all the individual appendices that make up the individual technical documents that we talk about within this LRTP. And we're hoping that we can get some comments from you, if you have them, by December 16th, so they can be incorporated, and then we have to send the full document off to DOT for review. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to.
Any questions of Ms. Moore? Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll recognize a motion.
Motion to approve, Gilliland.
Second, Craig.
I have a motion to approve the 2040 Long Range Transportation Plan, the LRTP document. Any debate? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, so the motion passes. Roman numeral 6, presentations and status reports, presentation and discussion on the 2015 FDOT annual work program public hearing. Mr. Ferguson?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Every year, the Department of Transportation puts together a new candidate five-year work program. This five-year work program covers the fiscal years 2017 through 2021. This year, the first project I'm going to talk about is the State Road 483 Clyde Morris Boulevard widening. It goes from Bevel Road to US 92. We have funded the right-of-way phase through from fiscal years 2018 through 2021 for $12 million. And that almost completely funds the right-of-way costs on the project. Moving on, we have a Flagler Avenue project, or a sidewalk project, 12th to Park. We funded that for construction in fiscal year 2018 for $373,500. There's a possibility that this project could actually be advanced into the new fiscal year, which begins in July. Moving on, we have the Old Kings Road Phase 2 project, the extension from Matanzas Woods Parkway, a backup and tying into Old Kings Road. This project has been funded for construction in 2019 at a cost of $4.5 million. also. This is the project in Fort Orange that we do expect to be ready in 2017. They just aren't going to be quite ready enough to go in the current fiscal year. It's at a cost of it runs from Ridgewood to Summertrees Road, at a cost of $576,314. Right now, it's in our work program for 2018, but as I said, it'll be an excellent candidate to advance into the next fiscal year. Then we also have in Daytona Beach, the Beach Street Project Phase 1, Wilder Boulevard and Shady Place. We funded that for construction in 2019 for $462,000. This one is also being worked on by the city, so it may be a candidate to be advanced to an earlier year. Then we also have the Donnelly Place Bike Path Trail from Shady Place to Bellevue Avenue. We funded that in 2018 for a cost of $191,425. Then we also have the Bevel Road Shared Use Path. This project runs from Williamson Boulevard to Clyde Morris. The design is funded in 2018 for $126,800, and with construction tentatively set in 2021 for approximately $850,000. And then finally, we have a Volusia County project to complete the design for Phase 3A of the Spring Trail. This project can be seen in the circled area down towards the bottom of the map in the DeBerry region. We funded it for design in 2018 at a cost of $396,000. That does conclude my presentation of the tentative work program. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Ferguson. Next, we have the discussion of the annual call for projects, process, project applications, and directing resolutions. Lois?
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. In your agenda packet, beginning on page 51, you'll see information that includes the recommendations, the most recent version of the recommendations for the priority process that had come out of the subcommittees. And you all may recall that I started a discussion on this last month, and without having information written, it was a little challenging to cover all the ground. And so I did send a follow-up memo to everyone, which generally covers these items. There may have been one or two updates since that memo went out, and so I want to just review these. And again, this is something we do every year. Before we start our annual call for projects, we review the process and we see if there's any improvements that can be made. And that primarily occurs with a subcommittee. And again, if there's any loopholes, if there's any lack of clarity, if there's any changes in funding that we want to make sure that we're being responsive to, we go ahead and make recommendations. And in this particular year, one of the key changes is the fact that in the long-range planning, we set aside a portion of money that typically goes to roadway projects to what we call local initiatives. So instead of capacity enhancing and big projects, we're gearing these towards improvements to the existing infrastructure. Those may be complete streets, roundabouts, they may be bike-ped projects, or they may be more traffic operations oriented. So we have this new category of funding. It's not a tremendous amount of money each year, but it is nonetheless money, and we have to be able to identify projects and bring them forward to the Department of Transportation in some priority list. So the first item that you see here is considering ways to consolidate the lists that we give to the Department of Transportation. And you can see in the left, there is the potential for 10 different lists to go to DOT. So when they sit down with the funding that's available, they have to refer to a variety of different lists. Now, the strategic intermodal system is pretty much a set-aside, and that's pretty clear. Those are the really high-dollar projects typically as well. We're not proposing any change to that. For the regionally significant roadway improvements that aren't on the CIS, we are proposing to combine that with major bridge projects. Funding for bridges as a set-aside was kind of done away with under MAP 21. It was collapsed together with roadway improvements. And so we're just saying that these major improvements that affect our transportation system can be on one single list. So that's the proposal that you see here. Traffic operations and safety, what the committee had discussed was consolidating all of the set-aside lists. And going back and reviewing that, it was agreed that they should maintain some independence. So traffic operations and safety would really just have some of the local initiatives money added to it, and we would include projects that fit that category, but then lean more towards traffic operations. And again, on local initiatives, it's roughly $2 million a year that we, as a TPO, said should be set aside. So it's not a significant increase to the traffic operations box. Right now, we get about $1.4 million a year. So this would increase it by another million, potentially. The second set of projects that the committee's recommended consolidating are bicycle and pedestrian projects, regional trail projects, transportation alternative projects, and then the local initiative projects that are really bike ped related. The idea here is transportation alternative funding is somewhere around $450,000 a year. It's a fairly small amount of money, and quite often those are dollars that are targeted towards trails. So what we're saying is if we can combine that with the bicycle and pedestrian money, which is approximately $1.2 million a year, we can, and then throw on top of that local initiative money, we can actually have several million dollars going to these types of projects, which allows us to fund larger projects. It allows us to fund more projects. Regional trail projects are generally a subset of our bike ped program anyway. The point of identifying those separately is because we contribute projects to the Central Florida MPO Alliance regional project list. So we separate out trail projects that are a part of the Sun Trails, what's becoming the Sun Trails system. So that's the other recommendation for consolidation. The planning studies and transit projects would remain unchanged. So really what we're looking at are consolidating these set-asides. And I'll just, for the sake of history and as a reminder to some or new information for others, those set-asides started well over a decade ago with this MPO, back in a time when it was very difficult to fund sidewalk projects and bike path projects. So this TPO said, you know what, we want to take the money that comes to an MPO for being a large MPO, and we want to set that aside and reserve it. In other MPOs, they use that money to develop road projects. But this MPO said, no, this is the one way we can build bicycle pedestrian projects, we can help fund transit, and we can do other traffic operations projects. And so we started setting aside that money, but it became a list that only used that money. It really wasn't open to anything else. Now the DOT is interested in trying to promote and close gaps on the state road system. But there's nobody that's interested in putting a state road project on our list and using TPO dollars for it. And so what we're trying to do is find a way to incorporate those projects as well, and to make life hopefully a little easier for Gene when he goes in to sit down and he's funding projects. He has fewer lists to try and balance. We are being a little more clear about what our real priorities are. And so that's the thought behind the consolidation recommendation that's here. Before we move on, I'd like to see if there's any questions from the board on that recommendation.
Anybody have any questions? Commissioner Gillen?
So Lois, the recommendation actually came out of the TIP subcommittee and BPAC?
Yes. The two subcommittees, we held a joint meeting, so they're consistent, yes.
Okay, and then the plan would be for this to go back to TCC?
It's been through all of the advisory committees, and we haven't received any additional input other than what you see here. Where we will head from here once we have direction from you all is there are three resolutions that guide this process that talk about protecting projects and prioritizing projects and the categories and the matches. We'll update those resolutions to reflect everything that we get direction on today, and we'll also update the project applications, again, based on what we get. And that's what we'll be bringing back in January for everybody's review. So the hope is today that we can get clear direction on whether to go ahead and consolidate in the way that's proposed, consolidate differently, or don't change.
Who is the TCC rep on the board?
That would be Heather Blank.
Oh, Heather.
Hello.
Yeah, so at the last TCC meeting, do you agree that this combination of how to combine the lists was discussed?
Yes, I think that was the resolution, that the support generally that was given.
There was no motion made because it wasn't there for action.
But just the feedback I got from our rep was that it was a discussion item, and I think the belief was it was coming back. You know, it was going to go through some additional vetting and then come back. So I just want to make sure I understand where we are in the process.
It will come back for action in January, but it was there for discussion, for direction, and again, to provide recommendations to this board. There weren't any specific recommendations outside of what's discussed here. We did look at, obviously, merging the list. There's not much to merge. Traffic operations, there's nothing to merge. For the bike ped is the most potentially significant, and that would result in the merger between the transportation alternatives list and the bike ped list. And I can tell you on the transportation alternatives list, because it does not get updated very often, because projects, there's such a limited amount of funding, projects don't really move forward. The ranking and scoring had been changed, and there are scores on that of the top projects on that list that are in the 30s and 40s, and then there are scores that are up in the 80s. And so it's kind of an awkward merger. You know, the committee did recommend that if we do consolidate those lists, that all projects that are in those protected categories remain at the top of the list. Likewise, we've had a policy here at the TPO that any project that has had a phase funded remains at the top of the list as well, because once we start working on a project, we want to finish it. So there would have to be a merger of those, and certainly what I would recommend any project sponsor, as we do every year, is update your project. If you update your project, there's the potential to re-rank, and there's the potential to improve your scores.
And I appreciate the fact there was recognition that the local initiatives didn't need to kind of split out into two different areas. That does address the concern I expressed at the last meeting. Thank you.
I did want to just clarify. I think that one of the interesting discussions we had concerned just a request to see a draft of what the consolidated list would look like at the next meeting. And that was sort of like a proof of concept. So that was our discussion.
Any other questions?
I would just remind folks, I know change can be, you know, create some uncertainty, but when we expanded the MPO, we had to add and merge lists on the roadway listing, and I think that moved forward pretty comfortably. Likewise, the lists will get longer, but the money is larger. So again, that should not present a huge issue there. Probably the biggest uncertainty that I can see is that you have the potential for large projects versus small projects. You know, a $90,000 sidewalk project versus a $3 million trail project. And that can present some challenges. But that's not terribly unlike what we have now, because we do have trail projects that are $2 million competing against $100,000 sidewalk projects. And the sidewalk projects that are in areas where they are really needed, typically in areas where we have unsafe conditions or schools being built, tend to rise to the top of the list. You know, I think the committees recognize the need for those projects. So, again, this isn't, you know, anything more than a one-year commitment. If something doesn't work out the way we thought, again, we can always come back as we revise the program next year and correct any imbalances that may occur. So with that being said, are there any thoughts, any direction at this point on moving forward with consolidation as it's been proposed here?
I think one thing is we do have quite a few people that aren't here today. I think we may want, maybe you may want to reach out to some of them and have them point out this agenda item and see if there's anything, questions that they may have. But is there anybody here that has anything they want to add to this? Okay.
So moving on to the next, it's the local match requirement. And again, in the past with the we call it the SU funding, the MPO funding that we get, there has been a local match, and it's been at varying levels. Because we're considering consolidating lists, there's the potential for a project under local initiatives to get funded with something other than SU money. And so it would be very difficult for a local government to know how the funding is going to occur. Likewise, the transportation alternatives dollars have currently a requirement for a 20% match, again, and that was the attempt to try to leverage that money since it's such a small amount. But it is different than the amount for other projects. And so the committee discussed this at length, and what they ended up recommending is that we have a local match requirement of 10% for set-aside projects that are not on the state highway system. But if there is a state road project, the presumption would be that DOT would go ahead and pick up that match. And again, this is an opportunity for local governments to say, I have a sidewalk project, and it's our most important sidewalk project. Whether it is on the state road system or not, we should be advancing and funding our most important projects. We don't want to discourage anybody from submitting a state road project because there's a local match that DOT would typically provide. So again, it's a 10%, the recommendation is for a 10% local match on anything that's off system, but anything that's on system, on the state road system, there would be zero local match.
Any questions on that?
Okay. The next item has to do with funding limits, upper limits on projects. And this has been discussed a number of times over the years. We don't necessarily have consistency across the board. And a recommendation came out of the committees that the bike pets funding limits remain the same, which is $1.5 million a year and $3 million per project overall. And the traffic ops came up with a recommendation of $3 million overall. Now, my concern with that is that the whole point was to create opportunities for projects to get funded at greater levels. We have a gap in between our set-aside list and our capacity-enhancing list. So we have major capacity projects that are the higher-dollar road-widening projects, and then we have these small set-asides. But there's a gap in between. And last year, when we went through this, or the year before, the board said, we don't want a cap on the ITS traffic ops projects. We want to be able to have opportunities for larger projects to be put on that list. So again, just for the sake of history for folks here, obviously the downside to that is you could have a large project that takes up all the money. And you could have a trail project that ends up having 10 different segments and taking up money for years. So, you know, there is a downside. We always have a caveat that allows the board or recognizes that the board can make exceptions to any funding cap that is provided. So, again, is there any thought or feedback on capping the cost of projects?
Any questions? Any thoughts?
I'm opposed to putting caps in place. You don't know what's going to come down the road, and you start putting limitations on yourself without knowing what might happen in 2, 3, 5 years from now. You know, I'd hate to go back and have to revise a policy because it wasn't, you know, all of the potential consequences weren't considered.
It might also discourage, I like the way Lois presented it, it would discourage some cities looking at projects because they knew it would be the funding. Mm-hmm. So I'm opposed to a cap. Let the level of the project, you know, float up there. If it's an expensive project, obviously staff's going to look at it, and that's a worthwhile project, so let's just move forward. I don't see any need for a cap on it.
Is there a general consensus with everybody here on not having a cap, or?
Do you want a show of hands, or what do you want?
Commissioner Revels?
I think I was seeing nods about not having a cap, and my concern is inflation, just cost of projects going up, and you would constantly be having to change your max as we move through the years of inflationary projects.
Okay. Commissioner Dennis?
Thinking that's a good point. It's not just inflation, it's supply and demand that we know right now, with construction being what it is, and the availability of product is just, and what we're seeing at the county, costs and projects are just going through the roof because of supply and demand, and everything is increasing. So I think that's another good point to consider. We certainly don't want to tie the hands or create a natural barrier to completing a project that we've deemed worthy. Thank you.
Again, the point of the cap in the past has been to make sure that since it's a limited amount of money, that money can be spread and shared among different project sponsors throughout the planning area. There is, to some extent, a natural cap that occurs, because if you submit a $20 million project, well, there's just not $20 million available in a year. So, again, what happens is you end up with a project that gets bypassed year after year after year because the TPO hasn't directed that much money to you. So there's right-sizing a project as well. But, again, in this particular instance, there are times when projects exceed that, and there's no place for them to go.
Lois, this is going to come back to us for final approval.
It will come back in January, hopefully.
So I'm kind of get a feeling that the most, unless anybody jumps up and says, I want a cap, we will do it without a cap, and then when the resolution comes forward, if we have to, we can amend it one way or the other.
Okay.
Put that out there, okay?
So the next item is...
Wait a second. Does anybody have a problem with that? Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry. The next item are protected projects, and again, the idea here is that if we do consolidate lists, we want every project that is currently in a protected class to remain there as long as the project sponsor is still interested. We don't necessarily have consistency in how many projects get protected, and knowing that there will be more money and we're consolidating some lists, there was a thought that perhaps we should extend that amount of protection. So instead of the top three or the top eight, that number be expanded. And again, these are for the set-aside lists specifically. The committee wasn't looking at any others. So they recommended, the subcommittees recommended that all of the priority projects that are currently protected, of course, remain in that status, and that the traffic ops set aside have the top 10 projects protected, and then on the bicycle and pedestrian list, it is currently ranked 1 through 3, and the bike ped committee wanted to keep it at 1 through 3. So if there are any thoughts, that's a big difference between the two programs, certainly, ranking the top, or protecting the top three versus protecting the top eight. If we consolidate that very first year, a number of projects will be protected anyway. just because they're currently in that status. But the idea with the bike ped group is if somebody's at the top, they want them to be able to stay there and be able to plan accordingly for their staff, knowing that a project would start to move potentially into the work program. But they also were pretty strong in their belief that, Dustin, you can certainly chime in if necessary, but they're pretty strong in their belief that if a new project gets entered into the system and it scores high, it should move forward. And so they want the opportunity for projects to be ranked and re-ranked based on their merits. So are there any thoughts there?
Could that possibly move a project ahead of one of the, is that what you're saying?
Certainly project number 4, 5, or 6 could have a new project come in and move ahead as it was waiting for funding. And again, those numbers have varied over the years. I don't know that there's any particular magic to them. But again, what we try to do is make sure that projects that are getting close to being funded, now budgets can be set for the local match, staffing can be allocated as necessary. We don't want anybody to be surprised when a project is getting close to funding or to be setting aside funding and time only to find that they got bumped. So again, we certainly want to continue, I think, ranking or protecting some projects that are in that top tier waiting for funding. The question is how long, if you're number 8, how long can you sit there? And we've had projects in some cases sit there for a lengthy period of time, which caused us to say you get bypassed 3 times and you move out of that status.
I would think that a project that had been in a protected class for a period of time, unless the people that wanted that project felt that, you know, no way in heck it was ever going to get funded, that maybe they could make that decision as to pull it off. But I don't like to have something just come rambling along and just kick something out because, you know, it does create some problems, I think, politically. Yes, sir.
I think the point behind a project being able to come in and jump ahead and be a project that's ready to go, that, you know, time is of the essence for a project that is turnkey and just ready to rock out, whereas a project that may be sitting at the top that is protected, there's still time that before it's ready to go. And I think that's the thought behind it, is that we don't neglect while the iron's hot, so to speak, for a project that is, you know, potentially there.
Are you talking about like a shovel-ready project? Is that what
right.
you're referring to?
Correct.
Something that everything is ready to go? That
correct.
What's the thought of the body here?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Speaking to that statement, I think that we have in the past, when we've had those conditions pop up, have we not been able to go back and amend and approve in certain circumstances when we had a project, we had extra funding, or we had a project that was ready to go and others weren't? That's one item. And then the second is that if we do move forward with the consolidation, why would we change this until this time next year after we've done the consolidation and revisit it?
Any other comments? Commissioner Denny's and then Mr. Gillian.
Yeah, again, I agree with the commissioner. I think consolidation of the priorities, I support. This one, I think we don't have to do everything at once. It's not going to impact anything, because you're right, this authority, we have the ultimate say. So if we choose to do that, we have the parameters to do that, right, Lois?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not that if this doesn't happen, jeopardy will occur. I mean, we have seen where funding, and we've done that with accounting projects, we've pulled back where other funding sources were available, and they have moved up to the top slot because just not shovel ready, but funding ready too, can help the process. So I think we have proven pretty good stewards of this process in identifying and not locking projects out that were ready. So I don't think I support this piece of it. I don't support that. Not now.
Commissioner Gillen?
And as Heather pointed out earlier, you know, right now we're kind of having a conceptual conversation until we actually see the lists and see what might happen.
Right.
And we have examples of the consequences of some of these concepts, then, you know, I don't think this is going to come back in January, because I think there's a lot more discussion that needs to happen. Once we actually start looking at, you know, the detail and the consequences of these implementing these particular concepts.
Well, and I can go ahead and send out what the merged or consolidated bicycle and pedestrian list would look like. That is, again, the only list that would really have any change associated with it. So we can go ahead and get that sent out to folks. I would just caution you that we fall under a time crunch for getting project applications each year and creating these lists. So waiting beyond January would be a challenge for us.
Mr. Cheney, did you have something you wanted to say? Okay. Any other comments? Is he coming up here to hit me?
So the next item is planning studies. The recommendation is very, very limited. It's just that we combine safety and security together, and that we add a statement that it be consistent, that any planning studies be consistent with the goals of the long-range plan. So that's a fairly benign recommendation, just cleaning up a little bit. Otherwise, the description and the program would stay the same. And then the last item has to do with bonus points, excuse me. There's a scale for awarding additional points to a project if the local government puts up matching dollars. And currently, that scale is a maximum of 10 points when a third of the money is put up by the local government. And the committees were recommending changing that scale proportionately along the way to the top end being 10 points awarded when a local government puts up a 50% match, which I can't remember that occurring, but it is an option. There are certainly cases where local governments have matched 20 or 30%, again, to move simply to move a project along, or because a project exceeded the cap.
Boy, that rang a bell. Councilwoman Denny's.
Lois, just so I understand this before I comment, will you review this again? Just say it again. So where are we currently with this? To get bonus points, 10-point maximum requires how much of a match from a government?
32%.
32. And the committee wants it to go to?
50.
Okay. On the committee, with all due respect, are any of them responsible for a budget in a municipality or county?
Well, certainly the technical committee members are well aware of the budget impacts here. I think their point is that, I probably shouldn't speak to it, but they just think that scale should be a little higher, obviously, that you don't get points without putting up money. Now, to be clear, that the local match is not only what your government matches.
Understood.
It can be a grant.
Understood.
It can be ECHO funds, which
Understood.
Has been used before.
I don't support this, for the record. Okay. We'll stay where we are.
Thank you.
Mr. Dillon.
I agree with Councilwoman Denny's that we need to just stay where we are with this. And Lois brings up a great point that it's never happened. Nobody's ever gotten to 32%. So then why would we jack the bar up to 50%?
Maybe that's the point.
There's something behind this, because it doesn't make any sense for it to come forward. So if they really want to push this, they need to come back with a legitimate rationale as to why it makes sense to do this, particularly because it's something that – what they're basically doing is they're eliminating the bonus points by making this change. And I want to know why they believe that eliminating bonus points is a good idea, because I don't think it's a good idea. You know, but the larger local match, the idea is when you have that, it leaves more money in our budget, in the TPO, to fund additional projects. You know, so by getting rid of the likelihood of getting bonus points to make a meaningful difference on a list or a ranking, then what you're really doing is you're reducing the number of projects we're going to be able to fund out of this organization.
Any other comments? Mayor Massasi?
Did I misunderstand or mishear? Did you say that they were talking about originally about so many points based on percentage? In other words, 2% bonus points and put 10% match and so forth. Graduated, that was the original intent, but then they just moved this?
No, that is currently how it is managed.
Process.
Yep.
Okay.
And they're just recommending that it be slid so that the match be a higher requirement to get the max points. But I think it kind of goes back to what you're saying, which is we don't have to change everything. If we're going to have a lot of projects in a protected category, then this is not terribly relevant this year anyway. All right. Well, thank you very much for your feedback on these items. We'll go back and start amending applications and resolutions, and I will get a draft or proposed conceptual merged list for the bicycle and pedestrian category so everybody can see what that looks like.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Ferguson, I think you're up. Might want to make everybody aware of the fact that got a little problem out there on the road on I-95. Anybody's going to be heading south today?
Okay. Well, we certainly do make every effort to have our roads operational during the holiday season, but there appears to be a difficulty in the southbound direction. Moving down through my list, there's the 415 project down in, from the Seminole County line up to Reed Ellis. That project is on track to be completed this spring. Further, the I-4 widening job from 44 to 95, that's on track to be completed next summer. We've also got the US 92 Penn Bridge, which we had an opening on. That's expected to be completed in the next few months with all the final work. Moving on, we have the very busy project here, 95, I-4, and 92. That project is out in spring of 2018 at current progress. Moving on down a little bit here, there is a sidewalk project that we've been working on US 17 from Hagstrom to Washington Avenue in the city of Pearson. This project is very nearly complete now, and it seems to be being well used even before it opens. Further, there's a resurfacing project on Seabreeze / Mason Avenue from South Peninsula. This project is actually moving ahead of schedule. We had initially projected to be completed in spring of 2016. We expect it to be completed a few months earlier than that. That pretty much summarizes the majority of the construction report. I did just want to let you know there's a push button project on I-95 southbound ramp to eastbound State Road 44 where we're adding a loop. That project is temporarily on hold pending coordination with Federal Highway Administration.
Just answered my question.
Thank you, Mr. Ferguson. Yeah, if you're headed south on I-95, you got a little bit of a problem if you get around exit 250, I believe. It's a wonderful app here that you could have that I wake up in the morning and it's just got updated again with more problems out there. You're going to be on I-95 just around this area. So it's a wonderful app. It's free, and I've been using it for years. The only problem with it, I was coming back on I-10 one day, and the accident happened directly in front of me, and all lanes were closed for about 2 hours. So it's not that efficient. But
so it's only accidents that already happened and won't tell you when the ones that are about to happen?
Yeah, they don't tell you about the ones that are about to happen. And Mr. Ferguson said they're working on that, but it might be a while. So, and when they figure that one out, I'm going to take them over to the dog track. Lois, do you have any executive director's report?
I do. Thank you very much. We've been talking about the annual retreat. Save the date, again, February 5th, 2016. We still don't have a location for that, but we'll be working on that over the next couple of weeks and getting more information out. We'll be focusing on technology this year and all of the different advancements that are affecting the transportation system and planning for the future. With regards to the Sun Trails program, again, this is a statewide network of multi-use trails that has been designated, and in the last legislative session, there was a change to Florida statutes setting aside $25 million a year to help develop that particular trail system. And the Department of Transportation is working with staff from DEP to try to go ahead and develop the Sun Trail program and the application process and how they will select and rank projects that get to access that funding. And they've asked, this is kind of a last minute request, that we provide input to them within the next 30 days. And so based on the priority process and set of guiding policies that we already have, unless there's any objection, I would go ahead and draft a letter to them, basically encouraging them to follow a lot of the policies that we use to prioritize and rank projects. We have resolutions that are pretty clear about what we do and how we set our priorities. We've been using those for a long time, although we do adjust it every year. And I think it would probably make sense for the state to include some of those. That involves points for local match, cost overrun, ranking projects based on connectivity, and those sorts of things.
Is there any objection to that request? Okay, Lois.
Thank you. And then lastly, we've had discussions about our priority lists and getting those projects ready for programming with the Department of Transportation, and I was asked to go ahead and provide an update each month to make sure that we're all clear about where those projects stand. Well, currently we have in the current year in our bicycle and pedestrian box right around $200,000 that has not been programmed yet. And the DOT is working with the city of Daytona Beach to get the Holzenbach Drive sidewalk project programmed. And that looks like it'll be moving forward, and that will be for construction. And then they've also been looking at some other projects that are on the list that may be able to access design money. In this case, it looks like another Bevel Road project. There are a couple of projects that are looking for construction that are ahead of that, but I don't think they're going to be ready to meet the deadline. So it looks like we're in good shape to draw down the set-aside money for this year in the bike ped box. Likewise, on the ITS traffic ops side, because of the action that occurred earlier, we'll be drawing down a significant amount of money that's available in current year. And once that is complete, there should be another roughly $200,000 there. The DOT has been working with New Smyrna Beach on the traffic signal preemption project, and it looks like they're getting very close to being able to program that, so hopefully we'll see that on the agenda in January, and any additional money that might be available can pay down the advanced construction funds against any projects we have. So it looks like we're in good shape for getting all of the funding allocated for the current year. That's all I have in terms of reports and updates. My final comment would be that everybody have a very safe and enjoyable Thanksgiving, and since we are not meeting in December, it's a very safe holiday season.
Any member comments this morning? Anybody have anything they want to say? You've talked too much today. Go ahead.
I've got your back. You should have me talking. Just saying. Just want to thank Lois for coming out in the TPO, for showing up at the Edgewater Trail ribbon cutting. For those of you that weren't there, didn't know about it, we, with the county partnering with the city of Edgewater and TPO, we had well over 200 people minimum at that ribbon cutting, and the county unveiled the Great Reveal, and thank you, Councilwoman Northey, for helping with the Great Reveal, the Trails app. Volusia County has we have an app for that with the trails. It's really a pretty... pretty good app here. So thank you. And Lois brought a trailer load full of bike helmets that were a great hit. It was really, it was probably out of all the events that I've done as an elected, and I'm still getting feedback whether it's at Publix or a restaurant, folks stopping me and thanking me for what we've done at that Trails, and they were at that event, and they're busy. I mean, you go down Mission Road, you have to stop on Old Mission Road for that crossing still of folks using the trail. That's how much it's being utilized. It's great. It's wonderful. So, Lois, thank you for your support, and the City of Edgewater did a wonderful job with that. They're not here, but it should go so noted. It was great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have to recognize both Stephen and Bob.
Yes.
Came in fifth helmets, and Stephen runs that program, and he does a wonderful job. It was a wonderful event.
It was. Thank you.
Any other comments?
Move adjournment.
No other business? We are adjourned. Thank you.